Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show we have one of our oldest and longest friends, Sean Hogue. Welcome to the show, Sean Hogue.
You call me old?
Well, yes. You are older than I am.
Barely.
How old are you, Sean Hogue?
39. I'll be 39. Yes.
But we will not disclose your birthday for all the listeners who may.
It is one of the biggest secrets of the friendship with Sean Hogue is when actually Sean Hogue's birthday is.
I don't think.
Although
it is.
I have it circled on every calendar.
I think it's. I've manufactured the hype.
The hype. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. You've
manufactured. And unfortunately, most of it's died.
So. Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with your lack of social media presence.
That and also partly beating the proverbial dead horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you play that trick more than four times and it starts to have diminishing returns.
It's not like Family Guy where you can do it enough that it becomes funny again.
I am not as funny as Seth MacFarlane.
Oh.
It turns out.
Wow.
So for the listeners, for the listeners that don't know what we're talking about, throughout the last, I will call it 10 years that I've known Sean Hogue, which is insane to sort of think about that.
Has it been that long?
Over 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah. which is how I met really Sean Hogue for the first time, but from that point he sort of was really in charge of his social media when you could sort of change your birthdays and do stuff.
Yeah, Facebook let you change your birthday at your whim, so you could change your birthday every single day, and it was back when I was, full of piss and vinegar, and I thought, this whole wishing people a happy birthday thing, I think somebody needs to ruin that for everyone. And I nominated myself, of course, because I'm not about to burden anyone else with that sort of responsibility. So my trick was that I would change my birthday every day to be that day and observe how many people would wish me a happy birthday 3-4 days in a row before they finally said something to the effect of, wasn't it your birthday yesterday? Mostly to point out the vapid things that we do on social media. It was a very deep and moving statement.
Yes.
Well, I definitely think it proved a couple of points. Well, I'm sure it sort of came from, that humor.
Well,
to
be serious, I don't think it did. I don't think it accomplished anything. It might have made a couple people realize that we do all these silly things that don't really mean anything. But the problem with that argument is that that doesn't matter. What matters is that even if it's just because you saw a reminder, if you still make that effort to express kindness to someone else, it kind of doesn't matter whether you were reminded or you actually knew it was their birthday. It's sometimes the thought really is all that counts.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I have just had the craziest conversations about the birthdays on social media, and Courtney sort of has as well, where she's like, I don't wish anyone, because if you mean something to me, like, I know what your birthday is, so she doesn't do that.
Right.
And I talk about it. I actually started that conversation because of people who have passed away on Facebook, but their Facebooks are still active, and those birthdays come up. And so the most recent one, unfortunately, was Chris Holbrook, I believe last week. And I just all of a sudden become weirdly obsessed about watching people be like, happy birthday, we should get together soon for a drink. And I'm just like, you are that removed.
Really? They don't know.
I mean, no disrespect to call it this person, but Jim O'Hare, from Parks and Rec was the one who said that. Now, I know that's a removed
friend.
Well,
but see, that makes sense. Jim should not be aware of Chris's death.
Correct.
There's no reason he should know that.
But how is Chris's Facebook now not turned into a memorial page? Really, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's
the conversation.
That would be,
over.
Whoever manages his estate. So his family members ostensibly should have, or maybe they shouldn't have. I mean, we're in kind of a brand new world in which we have these lingering digital ghosts, if we want to be melodramatic, but these presences that we haven't had for very long. Even the Facebook memorial pages have only been around for about 5 years.
I don't even think that long. I think the ability to turn into a memorial is like within the last 18 months, I think.
I think it's longer than that, but the point is it hasn't been very long.
Right.
And so no one has grown up with memorial pages, except someone who maybe is 10 years old.
Right.
And even then, right?
Right.
And so it does, we have to figure out new social etiquette for how do you deal with someone's Facebook page in memoriam or not? Is it appropriate to not turn it into a memorial page? Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the rules of, I appreciate the fact that I can still have some sort of touchstone or tag someone that I love in something that has passed away. I like that. And I love the tribute portions of like, it's your birthday. I know that I always do that on Anne's birthday or, you know, those sorts of things. I think that it's a wonderful healing factor for some people. It's just when it comes to the birthday portion and you don't know, it gets a little like, what do you do? Like, but that's my whole thing to begin with. If I know you and because I think I agree that we shouldn't slam somebody for the kindness of I've taken this 12 seconds to say happy birthday to you, but also like, but do you mean it? Like, because you're just like, you're so removed from somebody's life. If I know you, I'm going to text you on your birthday. It's lovely to have the Facebook reminder that it is in fact your birthday in case I've lost track of days, which happens pretty regularly as well. But it's, I refuse to do it on, because it also gets lost in the sea of like, everybody does it. And so I'm just like, no, I'm just going to text. And if I don't know you well enough to have your phone number, I probably don't mean happy birthday.
Right. Oof. But I mean, there was a time where the idea of texting someone on their birthday would have been just rudeness incarnate because you do that face to face or you do it voice to voice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And before phones, of course,
when
phones first came out.
Carrier letter.
And that's the history of everything that we've ever developed is, you know, cars were the downfall of society when they first came around. Magazines and newspapers were because people weren't going to talk about the news anymore. Oh, we'll be a society that never talks to anybody because of newspapers. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously.
Right.
And we see that same thing in
man has
phones.
That pendulum swung deep by the way.
Right. Exactly. And we just we keep finding that when new stuff comes along, like social media or various technologies, especially communication technologies, we get a little bit wacky with them. We do weird shit. And then we learn, okay, this is how it actually fits into our lives and this is how we maintain things. And I think most of the time we find that nothing really changes. So the idea of not knowing someone has passed away and wishing them a happy birthday, that's sort of the same thing as meeting up with someone saying, hey, how's Chris?
And you're like,
He's dead. Didn't you know? How did you not? So it's just the same thing in a digital form.
Yeah.
I think really just kind of proved for me in some way how easy it is, to say pendulum again, to realize that you are, like, friends with people that you aren't really friends with. Like, I think that it was very interesting that Facebook decided to choose the word friends, as that sort of thing. Now, in the beginning, you sort of had to be, and it was very college-based and that sort of idea. But that choosing friends, I believe, started to give people sort of, like, a weird false idea that all 1,000 people on this thing were your friends, and really it's just
acquaintances.
Yeah, acquaintances, yearbooks.
Right.
You know.
But by the same token, if you follow someone and you have the opportunity to see what's going on in their life, how is that not a friend? So it can go either way. It can be, we're using friends as this new, with this new meaning that it didn't have before, but also maybe the word has changed and the way we connect with people has changed. For good or for ill. And so, a lot of this stuff, it's not so much an indicator of society progressing or regressing. Mostly it's just conversation pieces of what does this mean for us as a species, as a culture, to have these things available. And it becomes an indicator when, when the excitement settles, then we see, we're the same as we've always been. We're still just as shitty or as nice to each other. We can just do it a little bit faster.
Yeah, we just have a platform that can reach thousands of people at one time.
Yeah, since with that, what comes along with that is also the fact that now we can do certain things faster and better. And so I would argue that things are, on the whole, moving in a positive direction. So that, we have all this instant communication, which allows us to bully people instantly from thousands of miles away. We sort of already had that. And so the bullying isn't necessarily new. It's a new channel, and so that needs to be managed. But the benefits of being able to speak to your parents or your child or whatever, wherever they are, at college, across the world, in Europe, whatever, that probably edges out the downside of having a new channel for shitty behavior.
Sure.
I think. Maybe it's barely there.
But I definitely think that you said the profound thing that we're just sort of really establishing what all of this means now.
A lot of it's still there. Yeah.
I mean...
Well, because it's changing. So, I mean, it's, you know, from what Facebook and or MySpace or, you know, whatever your platform was, just within our friendship time period it changes, you know, on the regular to not have, like, an established, like, you know, let's go back to your reference of, you know, the car was the downfall of society. But cars are just established as what they are now. There are upgrades and things that can change, and, you know, we've made the advancements and airbag and that kind of stuff, but it's not changing like social media is changing. It hasn't found its like groove of, and this is what it is now.
Until they start to drive themselves.
Well, sure.
Well, I mean, but everything tends to move faster nowadays, you know. Well, at least we think so. Maybe
are we just
not
old people now, and we can be like, back in my day.
I mean, well, but if you think about the span from 1850 to 1900, or the span from 1900 to 1950, and this is hard to measure, the amount of things that changed or the degree to which they changed probably is similar to 1950 to today. It seems like maybe it's faster because we went from 1950 barely having planes to 1969, we were on the moon. Mm-hmm. And from, you know, 60 or 70 till now, we have the internet, and it certainly feels like things are changing faster and changing more drastically, but maybe they aren't, because from 1900 to 1950, we also had things like the confirmation of the atomic theory, we had the atomic bomb, we had nuclear research, we had all of that, which at that time probably was just as momentous, I would think.
It's
hard to say from where we sit, but I wonder if...
Well, I was really just talking about, for me, you know, just like the time span of just being like wherever I feel like the Civil War or something seems like forever ago, but really, like...
It wasn't.
Just over 100
years. Yeah, ago. And you start to think about that, like, grandparents and great-grandparents sort of... Yeah. Because, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a grandma who's still alive, and she's 91, and so then I think about her mother, and I'm just like, we are just getting so close to, like, what seems like ancient Greece almost in my head, and you really think about, you're like, America's only been around for so long.
We're living longer.
Yeah.
And so we do have a more direct connection to a further point in history than we ever have.
Sure.
You know, for a long time, we lived to be about 40 or 50, maybe.
Right.
Now we're routinely living to 80 years old, and to have someone around who has 80 years of experience is pretty new, and does connect you a little bit further back than the people in the past, your ancestors. So
sure, yeah, I guess that's
right. I mean, we, you know, I have
seem to learn even less from history than
that is also.
It seems
depressingly accurate.
Yeah.
It does.
I just don't know if people want to talk about the past in the same ways that. Yeah, I mean, I'm just so interested in it. I can't believe that, you know, there really is a time where, like...
Maybe we're spoiled. Maybe it's because we have that easy connection to the past, whereas before, you kind of had to dig for it. Now, you can just go ask Grandma, hey, what was shit like in the 40s?
I was watching an Antiques Roadshow, and they were talking about that they only had one... There was this, like, one letter ever found of someone actually writing a letter on the trail to the gold rush. Like, they just were like, there's lots of before and after.
Ooh, how much was that worth?
Lots. Like, I think it was something like, something like that. And it was just so, and that's sort of how that conversation sort of got started, is to be like, oh my God. Like, there was a time where even a letter on the road was crazy. And that really wasn't that long ago.
Right.
I mean,
I was texting Alex in Tokyo, like, you know,
my dad,
with ease,
you know, a listener was just like, so you mean you can really just call up Alex right now in Tokyo? Like, even that idea still sort of blows his mind that we can face to face.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
in
I can
Tokyo.
FaceTime him. Like, I don't
Tokyo.
Have to. It does,
Sorry,
yeah,
not
I don't,
Tokyo.
Yeah.
Not,
what?
It just how you pronounce it.
Oh, I don't. It's not Tokyo?
Well, if you're Japanese, it's probably pronounced differently, but we Americanize everything. Like, Kyoto is probably. Something
else.
I mean, Japanese names we Americanize, you know.
Yeah, fuck, we're such colonists.
We are.
Well, but it's that idea of, is it, you know, we call Italy instead of Italia, we call Brazil instead of Brasilia,
you
know, whatever the native language is. Mm-hmm. Partly because there's no one who could know all the pronunciations of all the different languages of all the countries and the people's names. And so at a certain point, it is just a just a tacit agreement, like, hey, I'm going to Americanize your name, and you're going to Japanize my name, and it's okay. Cool.
But right, yeah, to fine. Your point, maybe we should be doing better than that with the ability to communicate, and we are just choosing to stay
yeah,
lazy.
For me, it's a pick your battle. Like, if you're going to say my name with a Japanese inflection or accent, okay, cool.
Right, sure.
That is less important than maybe a cultural understanding of, yeah, the Japanese look at life and especially public life much differently than Americans do, and so that those types of connections tend to be mm-hmm. more important, mm-hmm. or at least more fruitful. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
Provide more.
Have you had the opportunity to travel out of the country?
Not anything further than Canada, no. So technically, no. I mean, there was nothing different in Canada. The politeness of Canadians is true. That stereotype is definitely true.
I would love to go to Canada for multiple reasons, just to visit and see that.
It's a beautiful country. Even in the I was in the Maritimes, which was I think the it was the eastern side. So it wasn't Toronto or Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Toronto. Mm-hmm.
Toronto is how I hear a lot of Canadians pronounce it. It's like they just want to get the word done with.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in more of a rural area, which may have had something to do with it, but there was a marked increase in politeness.
Oh yeah, no, Alex said that it was, that it's, because he went for a convention and he said that it is exactly, I always think of Canada in, I think, Bowling for Columbine, it's mm-hmm. either Bowling for Columbine or maybe Fahrenheit 9/11, where, Michael would just go in and like open doors and they would come to the door and be like, can we help you? And he's like, well, your door's just open. And she's like, yes. Do I need to lock it for a reason?
Yeah.
And the, like just the shock of like, why would you, if I'm home, why wouldn't my door be open? Like right. unlocked at least. And that's just like blows the minds of all.
My doors
know.
Are unlocked when I'm at home. Until
well,
I go to bed.
I think
you know?
American rural communities, they also do that, where, you know, if you live in a small town where you know everybody, yeah, you leave your door unlocked, because who's going to come in your house?
Who's going to come in your house anyway?
Right.
That, I mean, that's...
I just don't know if a locked door always stops someone from...
That
I
mean, someone really wants to get in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not. No, I remember...
I'd rather you not break my car window. Just open the door.
Just open
almost.
The door. Yes, exactly. Well, people don't think to open the door is the thing. I remember Alex's grandparents years ago, when we were first together... had their, like, their garage was connecting to their house, and somebody tried to break in, and it was like, just, they destroyed the door frame all up and down with these crowbar marks and popped everything off, and they didn't end up getting in. It was a crystal door handle. Like, there wasn't even the ability to lock it, and it never even occurred to them to just open it.
Right.
It's, I don't know, people
it's fascinating.
Stupid. Yep.
So, to go back sort of to the beginning of this, how the hell do we know you, Sean Hogue?
I honestly don't remember, most likely. For Courtney and I, it was Dogsy's God.
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Probably.
2007.
Mm-hmm. And for Corey and I, probably
It's probably hair.
Probably
My
hair.
First true, real memory of actually, like, interface with you is sitting on the couch at the G House after a show or something. Or after, after BB's, maybe a week later.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, BB's, yeah. Yeah, that's probably.
I mean,
that's close enough anyway.
Yeah,
and I definitely remember having a conversation with Courtney and just being like, "Yeah, that guy's cool. I feel like I need to crack him. He didn't really like open up to me, but I guess I'll sit on the couch with him again, you know."
Uh-huh.
And then I think you were in a barn show after that.
I was in back in those days.
Tommy.
I was in several. Yeah,
yeah.
So you did Tommy?
No, you did a play there, right?
Could
who knows.
Could have been anything. I've done maybe a handful, a dozen of shows at the barn.
Yeah.
Few of which I really remember. Most of them were long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
But I think within our scape, though, which is what's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I also then remember sort of going there and being like, that's fucking Sean.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
Well,
like,
it's a small community at a certain point. And so once you start doing theater or kind of any performance, but especially theater... Yeah, you start seeing everybody everywhere.
Sure.
Because everybody, I mean, you're never more than, what, probably 3 degrees from anyone in theater?
The minimum. Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, yeah, as I get older, it's definitely...
Right.
Yeah.
It's not even six. It's...
Yeah. Sometimes, sometimes, unfortunately, it's, oh shit, you were in my show. Hi, good to see you. Right. Like, I have worked with you before.
Yes.
So then from that point, you sort of, we all sort of hitched our wagons to each other. You worked with EGADS. Probably Eubank Productions then turned into EGADS?
Yeah. Eubank Productions, I was first a performer with them. So that was the Hedvig... That was that Richard O'Brien show that they did. Who knows?
Something about pictures and shows.
Yeah, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
we did that. So yeah, I did a lot of that stuff, and then eventually moved into a more administrative role when Stephen Eubank et al. Said they wanted to go nonprofit. So Courtney and I had some experience. I had done the City 3 project, which was an improv nonprofit with a couple of friends. Back when I was doing improv. And so I had been through the process, you had been through the process, so we walked them through that. And then from there, the Arts Asylum was next when you guys decided you wanted buy the building and do all that. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much when I reconnected with you, I think.
Yeah.
I think we were just working in the same, you know, boat.
Yeah.
Ocean.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I definitely take the first night, you know, that December 9th, you know, 2009, you know, because I have a recorded video with you, you know,
so
the famous pants. But even then, we were still sort of like, you know, circling each other. You're peripheral.
We didn't,
yeah.
Like with most people in theater, you're friends with them during the show, and then when the show ends, you're not for any negative reasons. It's
just
that's the way it works.
Yeah.
And the next show, those are your friends.
That is the family of the arts.
Yeah. And then you see them out and you're like, okay, yeah, we had a connection at one point, but we don't necessarily hang out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But partly because we know we probably will at some point do another show together,
right.
So there's not that immediacy of maintaining a friendship that you might have with other folks.
And I think that sort of mentality is misunderstood a lot. You know, by outsiders to under, you know, sort of that idea of being in love with each other for this short amount of time and then having the ability to be like, all right, see you next time.
Yeah, I always wonder, is it like that because theater people are wired that way, or are theater people wired that way because that happens, you know, with the chicken and the egg? I tend to believe that theater people are theater people because they're wired that way, and so that's sort of a way that they deal with friends and having that many people in your life, because if you were friends with everyone you'd ever done a show with, well, then
you'd
basically be Facebook.
You would
or
be
Courtney Child. Yeah. And then it goes back to what your definition of a friend is.
Right.
Is it someone that you keep up with? Is it someone that you communicate with on a weekly basis? I mean, at a certain point, everyone has a different definition, so...
And I definitely think the parts of my friendships, you know, if anyone's out there actually listening, you know, who are my, like, good friends, is I also kind of need to make sure that if I need you, I have enough of a rapport with you that you understand who I am.
How to fulfill your duties.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sort of to be like, hey, but you know, we still kind of cool, right?
Right.
I mean, I stayed in touch. I wished you a happy birthday on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like,
that means we're definitely friends.
That means we're definitely friends.
That's all you have to do.
So yeah. And then you have been a resident of the Arts Asylum essentially sort of since the walls went up.
Since before we opened.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, you know, definitely Sean Hogue has been a wild ride and an integral part of this existence since
sometimes,
the beginning.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, you're a recognized name in my house, and therefore that's...
well, that's because...
Yeah, Maddie has a much different definition of friends.
I have something to tell you about Matt.
Yeah.
My household name for some unsavory reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No,
it sounded pretty savory.
Matt, I met through the same channels doing shows. But yeah, we all... plus the significant others, have been working together on various things for the last 6 years, 7 years?
Yeah, well, longer. I mean, you and I have been... I have not had a business in my adult life, of which I have had quite a few, that you haven't done the logo for or done something.
Oh,
you know, I mean, that's all the way back to Beet Garden.
Yeah.
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 You know, that's...
See, really, and
that's Husker,
I mean,
Sean. That's all... I mean, everything that I've ever done.
That's where
that's
we are.
A to Z logo.
Yeah.
Sean did. I mean, the Arts
Yeah, to a certain degree. The A to Z, I think, was... Yeah.
It was a modification on a previous logo.
And logo design is definitely not my forte.
No,
don't
hire him for it. But they're beautiful logos, but he hates
it. They came out that way, yeah. It took more work. But that was also back when I thought I was more creative than I am.
Oh.
And it turns out I'm really more practical. So in the software world, you have designers and you have developers.
Mm-hmm.
Designers typically make pretty things. Developers typically make useful things.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not a slight on designers. But at one point, I thought I was both. And mm-hmm. I have all the evidence across all the years has told me you're not a designer. Yeah, I can whip something simple up, but development is really where my mm-hmm. talents and passions lie. So yeah, logo design is a little bit rough most of the times, but we've done a lot of that stuff in, I guess, true Arts of Southern fashion, in that it wasn't me necessarily designing the logo. It
sure.
was a round of feedback, a round of brainstorming, mm-hmm. A communal effort. And then mostly what I did was I just executed
it, sure.
the Photoshop manipulation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you still did that. I mean,
sure, yeah, and that tends to be where, and that's where my role has moved more towards, especially at the Arts Slam in most places, is that yeah, I'm more a facilitator, a developer of whatever idea is come
mm-hmm.
up with. Once the idea is there, then I can run. But
a collaborator, if you will.
Right. Yeah, yeah. and knowing, I think knowing my place and my position of where I can be most effective has been a positive thing
mm-hmm.
for at least for me, so that I'm not, you know, trying to do things that I don't really know how to do and not really talented at, that other people are better at, and that's something that I think everyone kind of needs to find, in that you don't need to be good at everything, but if you do know what you can do, then do that and do it well. And
mm-hmm.
When do you think you really started realizing that was something you needed to focus on instead of trying to be the master of all?
It would have been probably on the 10, 15 years ago when I started looking at my work more objectively. It's hard to do that when you first start at something, especially because you're so distracted with how bad you are because you want to be good. And then you finally get past the, okay, well, I don't feel like I'm terrible anymore. Now I can honestly compare my work to others. And when I started doing that, yeah, the stuff worked, but you know, the creative, the visual aspects weren't there. So it's just, if you work in anything long enough, you're going to be forced to do that, because otherwise you'll stagnate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you're a master of anything?
No, I no, probably not. I have, well, I guess it depends. Like, you can call yourself a master relative to your own skills. And so the masteries that I have as far as things that I can do, sure, it's probably software engineering. It's possibly, yeah, that may be it. Like, I can truly say that I'm where I should be in my development, or at least close to it. But of course, compared to other people who do it, I don't think anyone is a master, because sort of by definition, there can only be one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're probably, no one's
not
probably
one.
That one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
he masters all of my math and science.
Yes.
Right.
But he's a master to you.
He is a master to me. Yes.
Well, and
he is the more informed to you, therefore that makes sense.
Sometimes,
yeah,
and on some subjects. And that goes back to, yeah, I don't know anything about cooking. I don't know
that's
anything
true.
About certain types of theater. I don't know anything about directing or producing theater.
Yeah, producing, don't you?
I've wanted to, if anything, it would be direct.
Yeah.
But there's a hill of knowledge that I have to acquire that would take time. So yeah, maybe someday.
Would you ever want to AD with me?
Possibly. yes.
I mean, yeah.
I guess I would. The real question is, what show would I be able to offer me? Because there are some shows that I won't have anything to offer. If you're doing cabaret, I'm not going to help you.
Fair.
Angled.
Well, maybe
not
it's
that
finding
show.
That project that one day
right.
we can
if
collaborate
there,
on.
If there is a project that I think something like what's the Galileo play? Is it called Galileo?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the one about, there's a couple science-based plays. There's a couple plays that are not necessarily
proof
as mm-hmm. musical theater.
Were you in Proof? Were you ever in that show? No.
I don't think so.
Okay.
There's a great show that I cannot remember the name of. That's about the first female astronauts that
mm-hmm.
I think you'd
mm-hmm.
be pretty good at. Too.
Right. Yeah. So something like that. I would be able to contribute something
mm-hmm.
at
yeah.
least.
Mm-hmm.
Dramaturge for sure, probably. No.
Dramaturge
yeah.
would totally be right up your
yeah.
alley.
Yeah, well that's usually what I end up doing on most shows, whether I'm asked to or not,
mm-hmm.
simply because I tend to connect with something more if I understand it.
Sure.
So for me, understanding is a huge thing. If I don't understand something, I don't feel like I can do it justice, whatever I'm doing. Even if I'm playing music.
Right.
Even then, it helps a little bit.
Yeah.
So I often end up sort of doing my own dramaturgy, and then sometimes I'll share it with the director, sometimes I won't. But yeah, that definitely happens.
Well, I'm glad that you are an actor artist who prepares. I mean, it's also shocking how often people don't want to do that.
Well, I would argue that I probably don't prepare in the way that most directors or musical directors want me to. Because if I'm a musician, I probably shouldn't be, for JCS, I should not be reading books about historical Galilee to help the music. Now, I find it interesting.
I think Kyle would probably beg.
Yeah,
right. And in this situation, it's certainly welcome. But if I were to work with someone else and be a musician, they probably would not necessarily be appreciative
of
that sort of preparation. Especially if I showed up and went, "Oh yeah, by the way, I don't know this music, but have you heard about the strife between the Pharisees and Sadducees? Because this shit is cray.
It's cray, and we should figure out how to put that in.
Right.
Right.
I want to play like a Sadducee, but I want the bass player to be a Pharisee." How can we make that concept?
And there's just like this glaze over because they're like, "What the fuck did you?"
And
say?
Yeah, their response is, "Please learn your fucking notes."
Yeah,
just learn.
But
your notes.
Do you know the song?
Yeah,
yeah.
No,
but no
the concept.
But I got it
right.
So, what do you do in your day job?
I'm a software engineer. I am a full stack web developer, and so I basically that just means I do everything. I maintain the server. I write the code. I design it. But since I do a lot of business applications, I'm not doing things that are pretty. I'm doing things that are functional. And so I'm helping people take data from their business and present it to them in a way that's easy for them to access, that triggers certain actions or notifications, stuff like that.
Does that kind of, I mean, without being funny, does that sort of excite you? Is that something that you want to be doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something I've been doing literally since I was 17 in some capacity. So my first job was I was the official web designer for my high school's website. And, you know, I was terrible, but having...
But you have to start somewhere.
You do. And yeah, that's how anything is. But sticking with it, sometimes as my full-time job, sometimes as a part-time job, sometimes freelance, sometimes not. That's what I've been doing for, what, I guess that's 20 years now? 22,
yeah,
21
that's
years
amazing.
Or something like that in some capacity. Yeah, so it stuck with me and it does bring me joy to build things like that, and they pay me, so I get to get money for it, and they
remember
keep paying
your first
me.
First website with a bouncing dot.
Yep, that was when I was freelance, trying to impress people with my Flash skills. Mm-hmm. That was when Flash was still like hot shit. Everything was going to be Flash, and so I did the whole show off website type thing, and then realized I'm a terrible freelancer. I don't budget well. I don't like to maintain client relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I like to just say, you just pay me every 2 weeks and I'll come build shit for you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you want me to build. Okay, cool. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So it's worked out well.
That's awesome. And you also have a fascination with astrology and astronomy.
Careful now.
Yeah,
don't
say
careful now.
Not one of those.
No, I am famously anti-astrology, but I guess I could call myself an amateur astronomer. The problem with that name is that I'm not making any discoveries except for myself. But yeah, I do have a complicated telescope that I like to take out. I like to attach cameras to it and do astrography or astrophotography.
Astrophotography,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that entertains me on weekend evenings out alone.
Violet
in the
wants to go out with you.
Yeah, I've thought...
She's very, very into the space.
Yeah, I'm toying with a children's program. There's a couple of things that you could do if you had, like, a group of 5 to 8 children,
mm-hmm.
And you had, like, a daytime event that started maybe around lunch or so.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few activities you can do during the day, and then as the sun goes down, you can extend that into the night. And so one of them might be to hand a child a star map with no constellations and have them draw their own constellations. And then you can take those, and then when the sun goes down, you can compare their constellations to what the quote-unquote real constellations are. And sort of that connection of you're doing exactly what happened many times over many thousands of years, showing scale models of the solar system, so seeing how big the Earth is compared to the sun, stuff like they do at the...
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just at the Griffith Observatory in L.A., and they kind of show you the distance scale, but also the size scale of how big the sun is to the Earth, stuff like that, and then end it with an evening looking through a telescope at some things that are, you know, crazy far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be a good sort of outreach type thing. Maybe not outreach, but just a science type.
What do you think those age ranges should be for that sort of thing?
I think they've got to be, and that's the sort of thing. I don't know anything about children, so I would.
Besides that, you love them, Stephen.
Yeah, no, there would definitely be parent accompaniment. I would think they'd have to be maybe 10 years old to sort of get anything from it.
Yeah.
Like, if you were younger, yeah, it's fun to color on the star map, but to make the connection between deciding this and seeing that and understanding what's going on and talking about scale and size and stuff.
Because I feel like we could manifest that sort of small, you know...
Yeah, probably.
That pocket group to
just
trial
see how
it
goes.
And yeah, to trial
it's
that.
Also a matter of, yeah, then you have to say, okay, well, the parents... Is this during the summer? Is this during the school year? If it's during the school year, it's nice because the sun goes down earlier, which means I don't have to stay up as late, but then it's colder. Mm-hmm. But in the summer, it doesn't matter if they stay up late because they're not in school, but you've got to stay out late. And do you camp with them? Do you say, hey, parents, bring a tent, sleep with your kids outside, because by the time you're done looking at the telescope, you probably don't want to drive home.
Right.
Plus, you do want to drive out away. So there's a lot of logistics to...
I think that would be beyond cool.
I'll buy a lake house.
I mean, I would take my tent there for that, because even me as 33-year-old, I think I would love
to see
that even remotely, what my knowledge is compared to how it transfers.
I mean, even when I occasionally
screw the kids, can we get the 30-year-olds in there?
Yeah, occasionally when I go out, I do invite people, so I try to do 50-50, so that I go out alone and then go out with people, and when I do take people, grown-ups have just as much fun looking through the telescope. I mean, how can you not?
Right.
And that's a different thing, because a lot of times then we cook, we drink, we sit around, we shoot the shit, we have a great time. And that's usually just an evening type activity. So yeah, that's also a lot of fun. And you know, you go out, you look through the telescope for maybe an hour, hour and a half, but you're out there for 4, 5, 6 hours.
And there's stars. Yeah, I mean, being in the middle of...
And even without the telescope, just having a dark sky, you know, within an hour of Kansas City, you have, you know, if there's 7 levels and 1 or 0 is the darkest, you can get to level 2 or 3 skies, which are, you know, 600 to 700 visible stars. The Milky Way is visible, especially if it's new moon, you can see a lot. You get your meteors.
I just want to see... I love being, you know... to be surrounded by those stars.
Yes.
I mean, I think we talked about next time Matt and I go to the planetarium. Like, I love to just go be and pretend to be out there. It's just so tranquil and
Yeah, it is. It's nice to do every once in a while. It's a nice disconnect from, especially for me, it's a disconnect from all the technological stuff that I do to get out there and sort of, even though the telescope is still technology, to sort of be without all those trappings.
Sure. Do you consider yourself a teacher? Do you like to teach?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if I have the patience to be an effective teacher, because one of the things that I know that teaching does require is an enormous amount of patience, especially with children. Now, with teenagers, high school, college age, I mean, you're talking to a fully formed brain, and so that becomes a lot easier when dealing with someone who is younger. I don't know if I could do that.
I think you love, from my perspective, I think you like engaging with people who want to learn. And if you have the knowledge to inform them, I definitely have enjoyed watching you. I've been a part of it too, but watching you teach someone a new thing if they are interested in the subject.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's fun.
I think that's the only time that teachers really need to have patience, is, or at least in my experience... if somebody doesn't want to be there, that's when you need to have patience, versus somebody who actually wants to know what you're talking about. Even the littlest of humans are very matter of fact. They're very similar to you in that, like, there's just no, like, and you know, at least with my kids, it's, I don't want to do that anymore. Okay, well, then we're done. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of patience required unless you're trying to convince a small child to not do something they don't want to do.
Right, yeah.
And because of what you're dealing with, as opposed to, like, I don't know if you should be like a elementary school teacher, but like for what you're talking about, they don't want to do it, there's no repercussions.
Well,
so then it's okay.
It.
You know,
yeah.
it's just like, okay, so we're done. That's great. That's fine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. For a program like that, it certainly would be easy, because if they're there, then they want to be there.
Right.
Yeah. I certainly have very little interest in convincing anyone anymore that anything is interesting. If it's not interesting, then yeah, we right. will talk about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would say I'm probably not a teacher per se, but I can...
But you don't mind educating.
I don't mind if someone's interested and I know something about it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff I don't, so my areas of expertise are very narrow. But yeah, if you want to talk about space or astronomy, cool. I hope you have 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. And I do love the way that Sean Hogue debates with people, too. Like, I will say that...
It's gotten better.
Well, but even when it would, quote-unquote, not be, just the passion and the engagement that you can sometimes give a one-person individual, mm-hmm. even if you are just razzing them or giving them shit, mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
To go toe-to-toe with Sean Hogue on a subject that's ridiculous or something that's intelligent.
At least the ridiculous ones are fun.
Yeah.
Know? Like, it's fun to argue true. About who is the best grunge band, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So you can get all fired up. And no one cares.
No one cares.
Yeah. It's a little bit tougher to discuss, you know, abortion, child abuse, even astrology sometimes, religion.
You mean whenever I read my Virgo, like, mm-hmm. horoscope, that doesn't actually, like, refer to me?
Nope, it sure doesn't.
But I can apply those words to myself no matter what.
You can, but you're also probably not a Virgo.
I'm probably not.
Because the zodiac is now about 3 weeks off.
Uh-huh. Whoops.
Dun-dun. Precession of the equinoxes, which means that, like, we know that the Earth has an axial tilt. Well, it wobbles like a top.
And it's so that microphone.
Exactly like this microphone, which I am
all
dutifully
of the,
not touching.
All of the listeners are like, I see it.
So the North Star isn't always a North Star, which means that the Sun... So your zodiac sign is what sign the Sun is in front of when you're born. Well, since we're moving, you know, we're wobbling, well, the Sun is not... there during that time of year. Also, the time of year, like, it's the same number of days for each constellation. Not each constellation is the same size. So there's about two different factors that mean if you're a Virgo based on your horoscope, the Sun was not in the constellation of Virgo when you were born.
Do you know approximately how off those are, or does that regulate?
The precession of the equinoxes is almost exactly 3 weeks. It's like 3 weeks and plus or minus a couple days. So if, how long is a sign that's like, there's 12 of them, so they're about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're not at the very end, I think it's backwards. If you're not at the very end of Virgo, then if you go back 3 weeks, then what?
I've actually shot into Libra. Is that
Leo.
Before me? Leo?
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
because I'm September 10th, so I'm pretty early in the
mm-hmm,
sign.
Right. Yeah.
Well, if you get a planetarium software, there's mm-hmm. Stellarium, I think there's Celestia. Celestia might not be around, but there's a couple. Even Google Sky might do this. You can put in the date of your birth and then turn off the atmosphere and look at where the Sun is, and you'll see that in most cases, like for you, it's probably not in Virgo. Or it may
yeah.
still be.
It's just been fun, you know, whenever you're a kid and you are trying your damnedest to make your, like, sign make sense to you, and you, like, you know.
It actually makes more sense that, because I've always thought not that we should be flipped, like, when I've seen, like, funny memes that have to do with stuff, and you have more Leo tendencies.
Mm-hmm. But yet, because I've marginalized myself, I don't even know what a Leo tendency is.
Yeah.
Because
besides
I just
crazy
try to
hair,
fit
it
with the Virgo one.
Well,
divergent.
I think the
one.
Main problem is that any attributes they assign to any sign, assigned to a sign, mm-hmm. They're attributes that all of us have at one
sure.
point or another.
Oh, yeah.
We all can be selfish or selfless. We mm-hmm. all can be introverted or extroverted. Astrology and, you know, Myers-Briggs, anything that tries to constrain humanity to 12 or 16 types, or
sure.
12 plus your rising and your
mm-hmm.
all
right.
the different
mm-hmm.
permutations, there's still this idea that people are, one, that different, and two, not that different, you
mm-hmm.
know? It,
yeah.
It's, and there's one of my favorite studies or experiments was, they, you know, they took a group of students and they gave them each a horoscope, like a 3-page horoscope prepared by an astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
And what they didn't tell the astrologer was, after the astrologer did that, they took one at random and gave the same one to all the students, and the students rated, and they said, hey, how accurate do you find this? How specific and accurate do you find it? Almost every single student said, yes, this is very accurate and it does describe me.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they opened it up,
and they realized, and they eventually revealed, yeah, you all have the exact same horoscope
right.
for you know, right. Aries.
Or whatever. I love a controlled study like that.
I mean, it's not as controlled as it could have been.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's
fun. It does show you that, yeah, it's easy to do that. And we see the same thing in, you know, the charlatans who do the cold readings. It's pretty easy to kind of find those statements, those wordings that make something seem profound or specific when it's really not. And also, we are kind of all the same in certain ways.
Well, ideally, I think that everybody kind of strives, even if you go against it, there are very few people that have the ability to be, like, super true as to who. So everybody's ideal them is a lot more similar than, it's just whether or not, you know, that's truly who you are, if you don't act on that. But, like, if you're reading a thing and you're like, that's totally me, that's the you maybe wish you were, or some people are that. But
I feel that same way. I mean, this is a strange tangent, but that way about a fortune cookie sometimes too. You know, like when you read it and, you know, or something, and it's just like the arts are where you're supposed to be, and I get it. I'm just like, this is speaking directly to me, and I obviously know the randomness. I watch the person pick it out of a bucket, you know. But I also find that fascinating too.
Yeah.
Where I struggle a little bit sometimes in the. You know, are things decided for you? You know, mentality of that, okay, you still picked that one out of a bucket, so how ironic and delicious is that?
Right, there's a great Richard Feynman story, I believe it's Richard Feynman. He burst into a lecture hall or a meeting, and he said, "You'll never believe what was on the license plate of the person in front of me. 1AF217. Can you believe it?" And of course, everyone was like, what? As the story goes, I believe he just went on with what he was doing. Mm-hmm. The point he was making was that license plate is just as unlikely as a license plate that has something like your birthday on it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't exclaim over these circumstances where we got these things that don't mean anything to us. But then when it does, we suddenly think, oh, similar to the fortune cookie.
Well, I'm going to even give you something crazier. 24 is my lucky number, and I feel like I see it everywhere. Yes. I feel like I materialize that number everywhere.
Sure. But in the percentage of the other numbers you see during a
day. I see 20 million other ones, but my brain is looking for a 2 and a 4.
It's a form of confirmation
bias. And so I put it there, and it's amazing whenever you search for it also how often that randomness could show up.
Yeah, well, I think people forget that the human body, the human mind, is a really shitty machine. It's terrible at almost everything except maybe comparison relative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're good at seeing the differences between two things that are similar, finding differences. Other than that, we have pareidolia. We see faces when they're not there because we're wired to do that. We have certain a type of impetus for many things because we evolved in a harsh environment. We see things that are relevant to us and we remember them, but we don't remember all the times that something was irrelevant. We're not very good at measuring or noticing things in and of themselves. And we tend to think, well, my senses are rock solid. If I see or witness something or experience something, that's the gospel truth.
Right.
But I mean, we know that there's a blind spot in everybody's, in both both our eyes. Your brain just fills that shit in. Your brain just goes, no, there's a wall there, so it's probably more blue right here.
Well, that's why eye witness or something doesn't really hold up sometimes in court. Like, in some ways, because your brain disfigures some stuff.
Yeah, there's also, every time you remember something, it alters it slightly in your brain, so that if you actually recall something you haven't recalled in years, it will be more fresh than something you've recalled every day.
Because your brain is almost filling in those and almost needs to make
sort
it
of,
more
and
interesting.
Sort of, and just that's the way memory works, the way that you then attach the remembering of that to the memory of remembering it. And so it's like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox.
Because you can't really remember it in real time, so every action is your just regurgitation of that.
Yeah, I mean, we color everything that we see, everything that is part of us is tainted, as it were, with our experiences.
Sure.
And it's easy to think that we're pure, that we are unbiased, but we almost never are. I don't think it's an overstatement to say you cannot be unbiased about anything. I don't think so.
No, yeah. That's
not a human.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-mm. Well, because as a child, our parents or our surroundings have already instilled things in us that we don't even know yet. If your parents never give you peas, and one day you get peas in front of you, you're going to be like, these are gross, instead of your parents maybe telling you from day one, just eat the peas. movies. Right. Like, you're going to love them.
Sure. But we have that curious blend that Steven Pinker talks about in The Blank Slate of... There, for a long time, there's been an argument about whether the brain is the tabula rasa, the blank slate of just whatever happens to you, that's what gets filled in, and then there's the nature versus nurture.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Are you born with certain things pre-wired? And Steven Pinker, who's a great author and a neuro-linguist, I believe, he basically talks about, well, if we look at all the different things that we've tested, we see that it's both. There are some things that you're wired to do, and there's some things you pick up from an environment, and sometimes one person's wiring might be offset by their environment, and in another case, it might not be.
Right.
And so there's not even any way to necessarily say this is always hardwired, except for, you know, certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is always environmental. And so, yeah, we're a mess. We're just...
Well, people like, you know, Courtney's daughter, Riley, like, she is one of my favorite... I'm sure she can hear. She's on the other side of the wall. But she is one of my...
So you have to be nice.
No, sort of.
You can't tell the truth right now is what you're saying.
It's a...
Boring.
Bias.
It's
an intense,
bias.
It's one of my, like, reference points of nature versus nurture, because I watch Riley be like Courtney and Alex in some ways that I know she gets none of that at home.
From genetics.
Yeah, and so, and then how, like, it's not. You know, like, how then the things that I would be like, well, that should just laterally make, you know, be you, that just completely gets missed.
Right.
And I think, so I've used her probably in my head for 10 years of saying, I feel like I watch that struggle happen.
Oh, yeah, I had,
and then she's
specific.
Particularly different, because I would love to have known, like, it's like I would love to talk to people who were adopted or whatever and had zero interface with
right,
their birth parents.
Right, because we've been part of her nurture.
Yeah,
as
you
that.
Still
right.
change her nurture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's very
yeah.
fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to go into the questions portion
okay.
of this,
let's do it.
Because I cannot believe how
mm-hmm.
quickly this interview
we
is
should
going.
Also just, like, quickly say that Sean is also involved in Superstar.
Yes.
Both
oh,
on
yeah,
the
yeah.
This Happy Breed side and the Arts Asylum side, and as a musician, and all of that's, you know, we touched on it briefly. But
yeah.
That
but
was
I,
awesome.
We are really excited for Jesus Christ Superstar, you know?
Yeah, it might be okay.
You, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, it's. I just think it's going to be a really cool thing for all the parties.
It's going to be an interesting
involved.
Take on it. Kyle always has powerful visions. I think the only question is going to be how much of it can we realize
mm-hmm.
with, you know, the funding that we have, with mm-hmm. the laws of physics that we are beholden
mostly
to.
Mostly that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's,
but
that's
I love a dreamer in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
I want the dreams out there.
Well, and he's also done this enough, he knows where to mm-hmm. compromise. And so that's really the process for me, is watching the dream become reality and where it has to change in order to become that reality, and how that both informs and is informed by the vision and the ideas of the show, and the things that we know about the story of Christ and the things that we don't know about the story of Christ.
And what we
things,
want to tell about the story
and
of Christ.
And things that I hope
yeah.
I will show to people about the story of Christ. The show may not have as much educational aspect as I enjoy, but the spectacle of it is,
yeah.
is a very powerful image, and the way Kyle is going to manipulate those images is going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm super... I'm
super
to watch,
excited.
Well, yeah, to watch Alex and Kyle.
Yeah,
has
Alex,
been like
Alex and Kyle have been getting along really well.
Yeah,
Kyle's real excited.
And I wanted to say that about, like, you know, you obviously have a really great relationship with This Happy Breed, you know, on that side, and then you have a pretty decent relationship with this Arts Asylum on our side. So what sometimes can actually come from almost that, in, you know, like that trust that can just come around,
yeah.
you know, that you can
yeah.
dream, you can fail, you can talk, and there isn't, like, a larger group. It is just us.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
we
also
we
have
get
a cast.
To...
We have a cast and a crew that there aren't many shows that have everyone on the same professional
you.
Level also.
Yeah.
Every cast member has done a ton of shows. They've probably done this show a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Alex has lit how many shows? Wow. Kyle has directed how many shows?
Yeah.
Everyone in this, there's not any... There's not anyone who's going to have trouble keeping up,
yeah.
which is kind of that's kind of a tragedy, because that means
mm-hmm.
no one's really learning.
I think there'll be
but
plenty of learning, but I think
there'll be learning, but
yeah.
there won't be, like, taking someone under your wing and
mm-hmm.
making them a better performer.
Again, that's me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the guy in the corner learning. So,
maybe.
Well, because I
yeah.
that is actually one of the things I am most excited for, is to be a fly on the wall and see
mm-hmm.
how Kyle and I get to play together in those
right.
moments, because he is. I mean, my job sort of allows me to be in there, but he has also graciously said, please come and sit next to me as often as you want. And I'm like, you don't understand. Like, I will take that that opportunity. And also, I just am so glad that it's taking place in our theater as well.
Yeah, it'll be fun to do it.
That makes my heart, you know, almost I could cry. Like, so excited for that.
Are you going to paint that ceiling black?
Is the discussion.
It is the discussion.
It seems like it would be
it's
the
really
easiest.
The question of when it happens.
And it's a one-time fucker. Like, once it's done, it's done.
Yeah. But we kind of want it black, don't we?
I think so.
We do.
I think so.
We
Less balance.
To be completely honest, Alex is the only person I care about their opinion because about lighting.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if he's just like, this is great for us, then let's do it. Yeah. But if he's like, oh, this is good for Jesus Christ Superstar, I'm going to be like, well, maybe we can put fabric up or something. You know, figure out a way to do that. But I am all about doing that. So, what is your idea of real magic?
I knew that.
And that horrible sentence structure.
Is my idea a real... Well, that is a very subjective question.
That's why I wanted Shauna Hook's answer.
And so, the answer either reveals something about the asker or the answerer.
We can go both ways.
Or both. I didn't know you went both ways.
I think we all do in this room.
I don't think anyone has any labels in this room anymore.
Real magic, I guess I can only answer that personally, in which case real magic is understanding, really, for me. It's looking at something and being able to not just appreciate it on the surface, but to also understand how it works in some capacity, how it's formed, how it's made, what it does. And from that, so many things spin off. If you understand a person better, you can either grow closer to them, or you can understand that they're not good for you. You can avoid pain. You can create affection. You can look at the world. You can remember your place in it. You can gain perspective. And that is a foundational level magic that can bleed into just about anything.
I knew I wanted to ask you that question. Because, you know, mine's like pixie dust in Disney World. No.
I mean, that's more like I would expect something from you. So from you, I would expect something about art and the way it touches you and the way it can move you and the way it can change your life just by putting on a silly costume and dancing around or painting a thing a certain way or imagining a certain reality. Which
it's actually love for me. I think love, genuine love, is pretty magical. Whenever you just can look at someone and say,
if you want to be all
I know, but I kind of, you know, just like that idea of being like that, that's pretty cool. Whenever you just are like, I love this, or I love this person, or something.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's pretty, which is often theater or people around me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you're a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why? I know. These are all important questions you have to go prepared for.
I'm a new color in a crayon.
You don't have to be a new color, because as everybody has pointed out, that, like, you know, colors exist. It's just whether you put
it. You said I was a new crayon.
Well, yes, but you can be, like, a specific shade of blue. Some people have been.
Right, well, that's the okay. Yeah.
But that blue, you're not inventing that blue. That exists already. Is what I'm saying.
What Sean is saying is our questions suck. Mm-hmm. No, just kidding.
Mm-hmm. It's all right.
If I were a color, contentful ennui.
Yeah, all right.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to have to learn how to spell that so that that can be the episode title name.
What is one thing that became more clear to you as you got older?
Probably the most important thing would be that in life we do a lot of things for many reasons. Very specific statement. But what matters most in almost every circumstance is, are you being constructive? And that you can apply that to almost anything. If you're communicating, if you're creating, if you're criticizing, whatever it is, if you're not being constructive, you probably shouldn't be doing it.
Word.
I'm going to want your answer on this. What problem or situation did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life than it was as a youngin?
I mean, parking for your flying car, maybe?
Okay.
I can't remember many specific things that television or movies taught me about the future, or made me expect in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, yeah, I don't remember anything. Yeah,
that's fair. We've had a varying of answers.
A lot of quicksand. Yeah, there's a lot of, well, yeah.
The D.A.R.E. program.
The D.A.R.E. program for Corey.
Yeah, I guess mine would probably have to be then the way people deal with each other in television and movies is not how they deal with each other in real life.
Sure.
You mean you can't just run down the street and solve all of the problems in 88 minutes?
Right. And the things that people value and care about and the decisions they make are, in movies and television, both illogical and logical in ways that humans aren't. There's a great book by a guy named Dan Ariely, I believe it's called Predictably Irrational, and it's just basically a series of all these things that he's done about the quirkiness of human behavior. And it's all silly things like, how do you make someone think someone's too expensive or not expensive or, you know, or cheap?
Mm-hmm.
And he does all these different experiments and shows that we're dumb, we're not very smart, we base everything on like what happened most recently, so we kind of have that goldfish have no memory, which they do. Yeah, we kind of have that goldfish have no memory aspect to ourselves in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say it's just that people don't work the way we think they should, and even when they're not working the way we think they should, they're not working the way that television and movies make you think.
Yeah. I think sometimes television movies, it's so weird, like, that no one goes to the bathroom ever, you know? Sure. Like, there's those, like, weird things, too, where I'm like, you have cut out simple things
sometimes.
Of life.
And some of that's just writing, because
no
one cares. But there's also shows that do. Like, I'm rewatching House right now, and there's several bathroom scenes.
But I think that makes those shows better, almost,
well, yeah,
when you see
that new perspective on a character doing something that most characters don't do, it
right.
does sort of bust them out of a mold of every other character,
mm-hmm.
because they're now unique in some way.
And
that's what humans remember.
They do.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that was our show, Sean Hogue.
Okay.
Thank you for...
One answer.
Huh?
I got another one answer.
Well, do it.
Oh, do you have another
You're
question?
You're invisible for 24 hours. What do you do with your time? And getting
invisible?
Somewhere isn't a thing.
So I can be anywhere.
You can be anywhere, but
yeah.
you just aren't seen.
That seems like a waste of a magical wish.
All
but
right.
I guess if I were invisible, I would pick a celebrity or master of something that I'm interested in. Like, let's say right now it's mixing mastering.
Mm-hmm.
So I might decide to sit in the office of Rick Rubin or
sure.
Andrew Sheps and watch them work. If I were doing some astronomy. I mean, astronomy is all done by computers now, so there's something interesting to watch there. but probably something like that. If I were like trying to hone guitar skills, I would sit. I mean, do I get to sit in and watch Prince, or is he still dead? Is it today? What if it was like 10 years ago?
We could do that.
Combine wishes.
Yeah.
You're
okay.
Invisible. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah, I'm invisible. Like,
I think you are the first person though that has used that ability almost
to learn
for
something.
Good and learned. Other people are...
Everything else is boring. Like, everything else... Yeah, it'll be interesting, but it won't do anything for you after you're visible. If you're only invisible for 24 hours, well, get something.
Yeah.
Like, get something from it. Do something that you can't
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I feel like mine I would use later.
Which is?
I would go to, like, the Smithsonian or the Louvre or so, and I would touch all the art. Not for, like, bad purposes, but, like, for if I could get up on, like, a Monet and touch the texture and,
mm-hmm.
like, get... Not necessarily, like, rub all over it, but, like, just get up on it in
mm-hmm.
a way you cannot do right now to, like, see it. I
yeah.
just... Or, like, go in and, like, touch all of the, like, ancient Egyptian jewelry to be, like, how did this get put together?
Mm-hmm.
How does this work?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's... You know, I mean, like, it's definitely still, like... I wouldn't be doing it for skills so specifically as yours, but I think it would still influence what I did. With
True.
My art later.
Yeah.
I think it's telling also the people that want to, like, disappear, that they would use that 24 hours of invisibility to be like, how about I just go, like, lay on the beach
right,
and no one's going to talk to me.
Yeah.
Like, so there's also people
yeah.
who, like, are in search almost of, like, solace. They're like, my life is so busy
mm-hmm.
that I need 24 hours
mm-hmm.
just to, like,
just to be in
calm down.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think or you have Kitty Gilchrist where I want to sit in the locker room. You know,
yeah.
like,
well,
so
yeah, I mean,
there's those funny answers too.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the voyeurism of, I can see things that I normally can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure, but, I mean, the internet exists.
That's what I was going to say.
So you technically are invisible every time you get on the internet, and whenever you're watching, they don't know you're watching.
They better stay that way, if you know what I mean.
I mean, yeah, let's not put that tape over there.
So my last two questions are, first, who would you like to hear from on the couch? Who do you think we should have on?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ is not available.
It's going to be hard.
But I might be able to get someone who's played in that role.
Does it have to be a reasonable, actual possibility?
Yes,
it's
please.
Easier okay. if I can get them into yeah. this room.
Okay.
But
so no Obama.
No, God.
But if you, but if
you
we
can
want
make
to start
that happen,
working on getting that.
Then,
I mean, okay. So actual people.
Oh, my
people
God.
That,
imagine that episode.
You
I would go to him.
You guys
absolutely.
Would, there would be no episode. You guys would fall apart.
Yes,
yeah.
It's true.
So I might keep my shit together, and then the second he leaves, I'd be like...
I think you would keep
I
your shit together for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, no.
And then Michelle would walk in,
or it would take you an hour to get over.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you'd finally be like, okay, but he's like, my hour's
done. I think I would be more, like, freaked out for Michelle than I would be
for
sure.
Mark. Yeah. So if it can't be, like, momentous people like that, it's got to be someone sort of in the city... that might have something to offer.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's telling in itself, everyone, for Sean.
Who knows? Who knows?
Shit. Do you guys do mostly performers? What about non-performers?
We have non-performers. I'm having an audiologist on in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I want to do is I want to go through my Instagram.
Okay.
And there's a couple people there that I think would actually be interesting. There's a couple artists...
It will be better if we don't edit any of this out.
Absolutely.
No, just have silence
just,
right now.
Right. Just like 5 full minutes of
can
silence.
You hear me scrolling? I'm getting that close. Oh, jeez. These are all naked women. Okay. That's all I have. I have naked women and like interesting artists and scientists.
Okay.
I'm glad Sean added me back on Instagram.
Right.
PassiveStatement.com.
Do you guys want like actual audio of this?
What do you mean? Of you talking right now?
No, of me giving you my suggestion, or can I give you my suggestion?
You can message.
I can cut all of this out.
Yeah, message us later.
Because I do want to think about it, because I think there's a couple people that I know that you guys could get through me that mm-hmm. would be really interesting to have mm-hmm. come in and talk.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just can't think of them right now.
And so then to sort of end with, is there anything that you would like to say or that we didn't get to ask that you would like to share with our audiences?
No.
Perfect.
We're just shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
Well, tune in next week. This was our time with Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to talking to you all next week.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Bye-bye. And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.